listening to Cuckjib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast. This is Series 3, Episode number 5 for Friday, February the 17th, 2023. J.J. Sefton here, joined once again by my co-host, co-blogger, and good friend, CBD. CBD, how's it going, buddy?
I'm doing great. I'm not going to bore you with the continuing saga of the winter that never was. It was 65 degrees yesterday. I had to ease my pain, and I went shooting yesterday, so that was fun.
Well, we have the winter that you didn't have because we had like 7 inches of snow yesterday here in Wisconsin. But it's it's supposed to be like in the 40s tomorrow, and it's all melting already. But there you have it. Anyway, while you went shooting, usual shots were being fired all over the place in the madness that is the continuing decline and fall of America and Western civilization. As many of you should know, there was a massive train derailment and wreck in a place called East Palestine, not Palestine, but East Palestine, Ohio, which I believe is about 50 or 60 miles to the south of Youngstown, in which toxic chemicals were spilled, including such wonderful things as vinyl chloride. And to make matters worse, instead of just sort of trying to clean up the mess and right the cars and to offload the toxic chemicals that weren't spilled, the EPA in its wisdom, both the state EPA, I guess, and the federal EPA, opened up the valves, spilled out all of it, and set it all on fire, creating basically what looked like, if you saw the pictures, a giant black mushroom cloud over southern Ohio. So this is just an absolute disaster. Once again, on the watch of President Spongebrain Shitspants, and as Ace calls him, Mayor Butt, who is our secretary or Department of Transportation secretary, doing a marvelous job, I might add, by not doing anything or being completely incompetent. It's the most massive. It's probably one of the most massive environmental disasters in American history, if not certainly over the last 10, 15 years. And EPA and FEMA are essentially doing really nothing about it. While the water is being polluted, they're telling the residents it's safe to drink the water. And it's just it's unbelievable. And it's insane.
Well, what puzzles me is the leap from, okay, here is a massive, well, it was a 50-car train. 10 of the cars were tankers carrying toxic chemicals, unknown number of which were vinyl chloride. But I'm puzzled by the leap from, let's stabilize this, make sure nothing else is leaking, to let's blow it up, let's burn it, and create this massive cleanup. And possibly health effects for the region. I have no idea what it's going to do. I know that vinyl chloride is a known carcinogen. So the idea that they're going to burn it and clean it up completely simply by burning it doesn't make much sense to me. But it speaks to the incompetence of our current government, and that is that they did not entertain any other ideas before they decided to torch most of northeastern Ohio. It's just insane. As you pointed out, this is insanity. And insanity plus incompetence is scary.
No, absolutely. And I mean, God bless him. He's really not even a month on the job. The new senator from Ohio, J.D. Vance, went down to his constituents. And I saw photographs and video of it. He stuck his hand in the mud and was pulling up literally dead worms, dead fish, dead animals, and some kind of sludge that was emanating upward. And this is what really is really heinous about the whole thing, is that I believe it was Mike DeWine, who's the governor of Ohio, whatever his competence, notwithstanding or incompetent.
Well, he's a GOAT rhino.
He's a rhino, you know. Exactly. But in any event, he pleaded with the federal government for FEMA, for disaster relief, to come in. And FEMA, this was their response. FEMA said that Ohio did not qualify, or was not eligible. There is the word, was not eligible for FEMA assistance. And I'm going, this is just the only reason that they were not eligible was because that part of Ohio went, I believe, 90% for Donald Trump in the last two elections. That's why they weren't eligible. That to me is absolutely the most egregious, horrendous behavior I can even think of. If you want to see why this country will never, ever probably come together again, the split, unless one side or the other wins at all, here's a prime example right there.
I agree. It's disgusting. And you know something, at this point, I don't really care what the law says about federal help for disasters. I'm simply not interested. It's such an egregious violation of our pact with the federal government that, I'm at a loss. It's so blatantly political. It's so offensive that, oh, hell, I have nothing to say.
What this reminds me of is like what they're doing with, by basically the federal government or the people in power in the federal government telling the people of Ohio to go F themselves, basically. This is the stuff that totalitarian regimes do to disfavored groups, disfavored minorities, and so on and so forth. This is not the United States. Well, guess what? Since 2020 or so, this is definitely not the United States. So we can expect this sort of thing that goes hand in hand with the censorship, the political persecution that's going on with the trials of the January 6th defendants with Donald Trump and so on and so forth. This is the most egregious behavior. And, you know, there's all of a sudden there is a debate coming up about the status of the so-called entitlements. Well, you know something? People pay their tax dollars, or actually their tax dollars are forced out of them to pay for all kinds of government programs, from not just Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, but things like this in the event of emergencies, of actual domestic emergencies, and God forbid national security emergencies that come up. We have a environmental catastrophe where the drinking water and the groundwater and the land has been polluted perhaps for years or maybe decades to come, where people might be coming down with cancer and other health risks, and they're like Love Canal, and their homes are absolutely, and their communities are absolutely shattered, and we don't know what the status is going to be. So a little bit of help from FEMA, please come in and help us mitigate this disaster. And they say, no, sorry, you're not eligible. I mean, when this is what your government is doing to you, aside from stolen elections, well, you know, there are the consequences. What are the consequences? I don't know.
The consequence for the people of Northeastern Ohio is that they're going to have many, many square miles that are very possibly polluted with a very dangerous chemical. I don't know what the combustion products of vinyl chloride are. I can't imagine that they are completely benign. The reality is that we don't know what is going to happen in the future, and that suggests that the federal government should step in. You know, if this were a petroleum pipeline spill, those kinds of spills are well understood. We know how to mitigate them. Private industry is probably pretty good at mitigating those problems. But this is a new one, I think, both from the volume of the chemical and also from the catastrophically stupid method of mitigation. Burning it simply, it just sounds stupid. Stopping the leaking is probably the first step. Cooling everything off, figuring out how to deal with it in a thinking way rather than this, what seems to be a knee-jerk reaction. Let's just burn the shit. It'll go away. I've seen photos people have taken from airlines, from planes at 40,000 feet, this massive black cloud over Northeastern Ohio. It's disgusting. And the federal government did that to us. You know, I'm not going to blame the railroad. They're in it for the money. The purpose of regulation, supposedly, is to control that desire for filthy lucre overall and force some sort of proper and reasonable behavior and accountability on the corporations. It sounds like the federal government is going hand in hand with the railroad, and let's do it the cheapest way and the quickest way, and let's get the hell out of here, because after all, these are just, you know, mouth-breathing morons who voted for Trump, so fuck them all. Sorry about that, but fuck them all.
Quite right. I was actually talking about the repercussions politically. I mean, in terms of society, and if when your government is not providing even the most basic services, regardless of who you voted for, you are still considered a citizen. Well, this is prima facie evidence that they don't consider you a citizen, or they consider you an enemy of the junta, so you get nothing. But going back to, you know, just common sense of how they could have mitigated this, and I am not an environmental disaster mitigator. I am not, the guy who used to put out the oil well fires, and it was it Red, whatever, I forgot
Red
his name.
Adair.
Red Adair, the guy who put out the oil well fires in the Middle East and wherever else. But it seems to me with five or however many, 10 cars that have been derailed and so however many that were still intact, you could have at least brought up tank cars to come in and very gingerly, very carefully pumped the contents from one into the other. Now, if a little bit of it leaked into the ground, well, look, it's better than setting the thing on fire and creating a toxic cloud of basically, I think it was someone described it as it's phosgene gas. Well, phosgene gas was a chemical gas that was used during World War One by both the Germans and the British. And a certain corporal from Austria, he had his speaking voice was affected by that, and that's what gave him that certain rasp. So I mean, you're letting chemical weapons essentially released into the air. The incompetence is just incredible. If I can think of these things to do, then certainly, I mean, maybe it's not possible to do that, but you cannot torch thousands upon thousands upon thousands of gallons of toxic chemicals and torch it and let it go into the air. That can't be a good thing. You got to at least try something. But of course, as we said, it's incompetence coupled with political retribution. And I'm not going to put too fine a point on it. I think that's exactly what it is. Maybe not the torching of the stuff, but not doing anything to mitigate the disaster that's been compounded here and not to clean it up. I think it's political retribution. I think J.D. Vance is on the ground there, and I think he's got the right idea. Hey, look, you think the water is so safe, you're declaring it safe? Come here and have a glass, Michael Nolan or Gina McCarthy or whoever the hell else is that's running the EPA. This is the most horrendous thing I can even imagine. And
use the word incompetence. That is a description that we use more and more for our government. You know, it used to be funny to joke about the incompetence of the Motor Vehicle Bureau or the various not particularly important government agencies throughout the country. Everybody knows that they're a bunch of screw-ups. They work 9:30 to 5:30 with an hour lunch and 4 15-minute breaks, and they don't do much. That's the price of doing business with any sort of government. But when that incompetence begins to extend to matters of life and death, then it becomes much, much more of an issue. And you mentioned earlier, possible national security repercussions that are being exacerbated by the incompetence of our government. And of course, it's a perfect segue into the balloons that are apparently being shot down over America and Canada. They allowed a very, very large Chinese spy balloon. Let's face it, it's a spy balloon. I mean, why call it anything else? To drift across the entire continental United States before shooting it down over the ocean and losing it. But they then decide that any balloon should be shot down, including the rocketry club from East Podunk High School's balloon that's been floating for a couple of weeks, sending back interesting telemetry to the geeks listening in on their shortwaves, or probably on their cell phones by now, since the technology is amazing. $400,000 missile on a $15 balloon that is very, very obviously not a product of a foreign country is simply it's one more edition of the clown show that America has become. Quite frankly, I'm offended. I'm offended by the recordings that I heard. I think it was the F-22 pilots. Hey, something? Turn your brains on and stop acting like drones and call it in and say, something? It's a balloon. It's a kid's balloon. Let's not shoot it down with this very, very expensive missile. That won't happen, of course. But again, it comes back to the rank incompetence of our government. But as everybody can see, that rank incompetence is more and more accompanied by pomposity and arrogance. We are better than you. You accept what we do, and you have no recourse. And
go ahead. I was going to say that, I wouldn't necessarily, put down the poor students from Podunk High, because their hobbyist balloon is probably sending back more valuable, more real information than probably the NOAA or the EPA or any other meteorological organization that the government is running by far. And they're probably doing it cheaper and better, and they're coming up with real observations as opposed to, oh my God, it's climate change. But that's another story. The other egregious thing, CBD, was about this balloon that was allowed to float overhead. They knew about it. Not only did they know about that it was a Chinese balloon, they actually watched the balloon take off or be let into the atmosphere from Hainan Island, which is just, I believe it's an island that's north of Taiwan, and it's right off the coast of mainland China. They watched it take off, drift over ride the jet stream, and drift over the continental United States. And what is the Pacific is what, 4,000 miles wide? So if they saw it take off and they watched it take off and enter our airspace, why did they not stop it when they could have stopped it? That raises a whole other bunch of questions about our relationship with the Red Chinese, let alone our competence in our national security apparatus and our military apparatus and so on and so on and so on. And of course, now we can segue into Joe Biden and Hunter Biden and their relationship with the Chinese and all these other governments. And this is which the documents that are supposedly being seized by the FBI, no doubt to be burned in the burn pit in East Palestine with the vinyl chloride, that will raise all kinds of questions that, you know, we'll find them there. So, yeah, this is rank incompetence, arrogance, and nonsense. And while we're on the subject of our military, what's going on now in our militaries? They're being trained. This is another segue into yet another story that seems to be by the wayside, but it's still important, is our military is embracing the training of our soldiers and indoctrinating them in critical race theory and so on and so on, and the dangers of white supremacy. And now that we have a house that's controlled by the GOP and they want answers from both Lloyd Austin and this woman who was I don't even know her name, but she is the chief diversity officer of the Department of Defense. She is a rank, horrible racialist, and they're basically telling them to pound sand. We're not going to come forward with it. Go, you know, come catch us if you can. So all of these things are just spiraling out of control into a miasma of incompetence, ideology, and posing the gravest danger to our freedom and even our physical health. So this is not a good space to be in.
Well, this speaks to military incompetence. The kind of recruit who would embrace this sort of training over learning how to fight, learning how to shoot, learning, you know, small unit tactics, learning how to fly jets and shoot down bad guys speaks volumes about the future prospects of the United States military. We're going to get the sort of person who is amenable to this sort of training, and I don't want him in our military. Or
if you recall, by the way, I think his name was, yes, I actually remembered his name, amazingly, for someone who's approaching 63 years old. My memory is sharp on this. It was a guy named Spencer Rapone. Does that ring a bell? Thank you. Spencer Rapone. Does that ring a bell to you?
Is that the from West Point?
He was a West Point cadet who, during the graduation ceremony, maybe 5-6 years ago now, he basically revealed underneath his cap that you toss into the air so dramatically when you're some sort of communist message about either Saul Alinsky or Karl Marx. And the guy's a full-on communist, and he and his ilk are becoming officers in the United States military. Well, this is no surprise, given that John Brennan, who voted for Gus Hall and Angela Davis, rose in the ranks of the CIA to become the head of the corporation under Obama. So, I mean, it's not just going on over the last few years. This rot's been going on for decades.
Yeah. He had a message inside his hat that said, "Communism will win." And he flashed it to a photographer during his graduation from West Point, the United States Military Academy. Yeah. Yeah, I remember him.
Amazing.
He was discharged, though.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But still, if he got discharged, then how many like him who didn't flash the communism a win in their hats made it through? Like I said, John Brennan. And John Brennan's open. He's an open commie.
Yeah.
Was.
Yeah, I think Rapone also crazy. Was wearing a Che Guevara t-shirt. Yeah, it's unbelievable. How he got through 4 years at West Point is another question entirely.
Yeah, these are the people that are taken over. Then they have taken over.
Yeah,
I mean, Khrushchev was right. They did bury us, so they're about to bury us.
So are we going to get with commissars and with no one to fight? I mean, are we going to be the equivalent of the Soviet army in 1941?
That is exactly where I was going. In 1938, for those of you who had an education courtesy of the American academia who didn't learn this, your friend of all you Marxists there, Joseph Stalin, basically purged the entire Soviet military, I think above the rank of major. Corps commanders, army commanders, district commanders were all shot and executed as traitors. And then when the Germans decided to invade, there was nobody with any military experience whatsoever. They were basically being led by NKVD commissars. And this is why the Germans got literally within 10 miles of Moscow. And the only reason that they were stopped was because of the weather. And had they decided to invade Russia when they wanted to in May, instead of diverting into Yugoslavia and the Balkans, they might have taken Moscow, and we might all be speaking German now instead of me speaking Yiddish to you every once in a while. But this is happening to our military. We are being completely decapitated from within. And people look at the Chinese communists and they say, you know, they don't have to. They don't invade Taiwan. They don't have to do anything. We're going to bury ourselves all by ourselves. We're going to commit national suicide by the combination of incompetence and ideology. And the communists, of course, in China have bribed people from Joe Biden to Dianne Feinstein, who's finally retiring or being carried out, to Eric Swalwell and so on and so forth. Even Mitch McConnell's wife is connected to the Chi Coms. So they're going to take over America on the cheap without even firing a shot. Just
I mentioned on the last podcast that it's an incredible bargain. You know, you think about the amount of money that the Communist Party of China has spent on purchasing the American government, and it's nothing. What, a few hundred million bucks, $1 billion? It's nothing. It's less than the cost of one of their carriers that doesn't work very well. Anyway, yeah, speaking of the NKVD, I noticed in the newspaper, I haven't picked up a newspaper in years, in the news that New York City has sent records of the unvaccinated employees of the city to the FBI, which I think is very, very interesting. So merely having no vaccination record in your New York City employment record is grounds to be reported to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Now, I think that's very, very interesting and extraordinarily chilling when you think about it, that people go for pre-employment background checks, and some percentage of them are now going to show up as flagged by the FBI for, you know, one would assume a nefarious reason, but in fact, it was simply because you are unvaccinated. I find this, and by the way, this is almost universally ignored in the media, of course, because, you know, New York City is such a wonderful place and they're doing so well with so many things. You know, there are no bums on the streets. The garbage is being picked up. There's no crime. No one gets COVID anymore in New York because of their wonderful and enlightened policies.
This is, you know, I was going to backtrack a little bit to you're saying the media is ignoring it. Of course, they're ignoring it because it's, as they say, an inconvenient truth. It's funny because just backtracking to the balloon story. Was it, this is not the balloon story, this is actually, it's related, not even related, I guess it's Russia and China, but, you know, I think I'm yammering here. The point I'm trying to make here with the media here is that the media is ignoring this, and it's funny because one of their icons, a guy named Seymour Hersh, better known as Cy Hersh, who A.M. Rosenthal at the New York Times once called, you know, my little communist. He was the one who originally broke the My Lai massacre story, and he broke the Abu Ghraib story during the Iraq invasion or the Iraq war. He has reported that, according to his unnamed sources, and I know that people have a bugaboo about unnamed sources, but it's Seymour Hersh, he says that he can prove that the United States actually had a hand or did blow up the Nord Stream pipeline. And of course, this story has been completely embargoed by the regular media, who, this is a guy who is one of their heroes, and they're embargoing him. And when it comes to COVID, they've embargoed and they've tried to silence people like Naomi Wolf. And when it comes to the whole censorship thing with Project 68, it's called, I believe, they've tried to embargo and censor Matt Taibbi. And of course, Glenn Greenwald. These are all people who are icons of the left when it comes to journalism. But if they go against the journalistic line, they get hammered. And I give them credit because at least whatever their personal politics may be, and I'm sure they're pretty left and they're very left, I should say. But at least they call a spade a spade. And if something is wrong, they will call out whoever the administration is for doing something that they feel is wrong. And kudos to them. But of course, look what happens. They get smacked down by good and hard just as much as someone like Tucker Carlson. Or rest in peace, Rush Limbaugh would get smacked down.
You know, it's amazing. You bring up Seymour Hersh, who was anti-American. Let's face it. The man is, you know, straight up communist who despises America. He despises Israel. And I remember, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, he was talking about Hillary Clinton, and he suggested that she is essentially owned by the Jews, Jew money from New York. So when people like that are the only ones on whom we can rely to tell some little bit of the truth, it speaks volumes about the quality of our media and the degradation of the Fourth Estate in the United States. Unbelievable.
yeah, again, his, yeah, that stuff I had forgotten about his, and I raised a question of, you know, when you talk about people who are anti-American, you know, considering the state of America and the American government and the American media and so on and so forth, I'm getting to the point where I'm anti-American. I hate to say it in that phraseology, but look at what America is. It doesn't exist anymore. It exists as a hollowed out husk of itself, or as what's his name, Iowa Hawk used to say, it killed it and it gutted it and it's wearing its skin suit and walking around and demanding respect. So I always just a question is, you know, with Seymour Hersh, yes, whatever these issues with Israel and Jew money are horrendous as they are. If you go back to issues of the CIA and the FBI and fighting wars just for the sake of fighting them without actually winning them, it's not necessarily so much being anti-American. Maybe Seymour Hersh doesn't fall into this category, but it's being anti-American policy. And I look at someone like a Cindy Sheehan, who was basically, you know, her poor son was killed in, you know, during the Afghanistan or the Iraq war. And she was used by the left to beat up America. But she had a point. These wars, which we are not going in, these, you know, democracy projects and all this other bullshit, we're not going in there to break things, destroy things and make people cry uncle and denazify the place and bend it to our will so they never do it again. We just go in there just to sort of, you know, prop up the stock portfolios of the military industrial complex. So there's being anti-American and then there's being anti-American policy. But at this point, look who's running our government. Yeah, you can call me an anti-American at this point, too. So I'm guilty. What?
You know, I'm, as many of us were, you know, two decades ago, I was, I guess you could call me a neocon. I was all for American intervention pretty much everywhere in the world. And fast forward 20 years, and I am nothing more than an isolationist. I think that absent a Chinese invasion of Canada or Mexico, I think our military should stand down everywhere in the world. We should consolidate. We should save money, we should protect our homeland, and we should stop getting involved anywhere in the world. What few allies, true allies we have in the world can be propped up or can be assisted ably simply by providing war material in need, if they need it. And I use Israel as a perfect example. They're perfectly capable of fighting their own battles. They just need extra equipment if those battles last longer than a week or two or three. Right.
Of course, this does not apply to Ukraine. You know, we will not. And, you know, we should not be giving them a friggin' dime.
And at this point, you know, it's not that I'm cheering for a Russian win. I'm cheering for it to end, and I don't really care how it ends. And the idea that we're pissing away our great grandkids' money on this graft-ridden shithole of a country, so that they can poke the Russian bear a little bit, is just ridiculous. We started the damn thing. Well, no, I'm being hyperbolic. We had a hand in creating the situation.
Yes, exactly.
In Ukraine. And I think that for us not to admit culpability in this is obscene. But the opportunities for graft on the part of the Biden junta are just too delicious for them to ignore.
Can you say Burisma? Yes, you can. I look at the situation. I say, well, who's rooting for who? And I say, well, look, if you have people like Klaus Schwab and George Soros rooting for the Ukrainians and the American left and also the idiots in the GOP rooting for Ukraine, then I got to say, not that I'm rooting for Putin, but I'm certainly not rooting for the Ukrainians to win this thing, because something is going on behind the scenes. If all these really horrendous actors are rooting for Ukraine. So again, I'm with you. I'm just, this thing should end as far as innocent people. And I really feel for innocent people who get bombed out of their homes, no matter who is tossing the bombs and the grenades. This thing should have ended and could have ended literally last April. But from what I understand, the Biden junta nixed the peace deal.
Yes.
So if what is the purpose of this? Why are we, it's horrible. It really is. They're as culpable as Putin is in this invasion if they could have ended this thing in April and didn't do it. So at that point, yeah, man, you know, all bets are off. To hell with Ukraine as far as the government goes, and not the people, and not the innocent people, I should say. Let these people sort their crap out themselves, but we should not be spending a dime there. Meanwhile, we nuked East Palestine, Ohio, and aren't lifting a damn finger to help these people who we've created a toxic wasteland, perhaps for decades to come, and cancer patients out the wazoo. And just because, you know, because we, whatever, they voted for Trump. So bad on them. Horrible.
You know, they, at this point, whenever I see somebody with a Ukrainian flag in their avatar or, I'm with Ukraine, I think that this is simply virtue signaling. How Ukraine became a proxy for Western freedom is beyond me, because it certainly isn't of the West, and it certainly isn't free. Let's not pretend here. It is one of the most corrupt countries on earth. And for us to hold it up as some paragon of independence and freedom and liberty, fighting against the evil Russian bear and that crazy man Putin, it's nuts.
Yeah, part of it, of course, is, again, it all circles back to Trump, because somehow they decided to tie Donald Trump completely erroneously, and nothing to do with it, to tie Trump with Russia and claim that Putin wanted, was the Russian collusion myth. This is why they're doing it. Another reason why they're doing it. So it beats two birds with one stone. Do whatever. Anyway.
Government among the elite, and that is Mike Pence.
God.
who squawked recently because he's rapidly becoming irrelevant and wants to hold on to his 15 minutes of fame just a little bit longer. He's talking about a new deal. I'm not really sure if he understands what the original new deal was, which was the probably the final nail in the coffin of American freedom and liberty and exceptionalism. But he wants to modify our welfare state so that it is a kinder and gentler welfare state, giving people the opportunity to take back some of the funds that have been stolen from them since the 1940s and invest privately. Now, it sounds like a very, very nice idea. First of all, it's untenable. It simply will not work. The future demands of Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and so on are monstrous. And the idea that the government can tolerate even a few percent of that being taken and used privately by the people who actually earn the money, it's a non-starter. They can't do it. As I said, Mike Pence is trying to remain relevant, and he's not relevant. We were talking before we started recording the podcast, and Sefton mentioned Pence's cowardice when he was the governor of Indiana. He is, maybe he is a true conservative in his private life. I think that he seems to behave honorably privately and among the people around him. But as a public figure, as a politician, he demonstrates rank cowardice at every turn. He failed to support his president after the catastrophe of the 2020 presidential election. I'm not suggesting that he had standing to overturn the election. My personal opinion is that he didn't. But he didn't have to whine and mule as a coward and say, oh, I can't do this and it's not appropriate, wah, 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 wah. He could have stood up for the Republican Party. He could have stood up for his president and been a man, but he chose not to be. He chose to keep those invitations to the best cocktail parties inside the Beltway coming. So,
yeah, that's what absolutely. I think of Mike Pence. Same. I mean, I was going to say
he has a nice head of hair. So I guess that's a good thing.
Yeah, he's Race Bannon from Johnny Quest.
Yeah,
he looks exactly like Race Bannon, but. In any case, all of this stuff goes back to what I've sort of crystallized for me when we talk about the GOP and we talk about the Democrats and we talk about the so-called two-party system, which really doesn't exist anymore. We have a uniparty, and we have basically the party of – it's two parties of big government. Essentially, the Democrats want an entirely all-powerful big central government, which has nothing to do with the founding. Does the GOP want? Well, ever since the end of World War II and the coming of the New Deal – all they want to do is, yeah, we have no problems with a big government. We just think we can manage it better. And we'll give you a tax rate reduction here, a tax cut there. But size of government will still always be growing. It may not grow as fast as the Democrats want it to grow, but it will grow nonetheless. And anybody who talks of cutting the size of government, well, they're just a knuckle-dragging, as John McCain called him, hobbit, from East Chip-Pip, who shouldn't be given any help from FEMA when the toxic trains collide. But that's the story. So this is the problem. We do not have any opposition. We do not have anybody who can articulate the fact that the size of government is directly proportional or inversely proportional to the loss of freedom of the individual and of the state as was laid out in the 9th and 10th Amendments. And whenever you have a big government, a big central government, you lose your money, you lose your freedom, and you get incompetence everywhere you turn. So perhaps, yes, should Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and all these programs, which are eating up our the majority of our budget, I believe, and plus the interest payments on this thing, should it be modernized? Should it be reformed or saved or whatever? Yeah, it has to be. But nobody wants to touch that third rail because it's too convenient to third rail for the Democrats to claim. Anybody who says reform means they want to take Social Security away and your entitlements away from you. And unfortunately, too many people buy into this crap. And so it's a third rail and it never gets done. Now, that said, I'm all for it. I mean, it's going to collapse sooner or later. And it's going to be completely insolvent. And that's the issue. But the problem is nobody is articulating that these things. Nobody is saying and sounding the alarm saying, yeah, you want to keep your entitlements. It's all well and good. But the path we're on, it's unsustainable. Nobody ever uses that word. And nobody ever wants to devote free market solutions to something to try to end this. I think perhaps George Bush, to his credit, somewhat tried to do this back in 2007. And again, he touched the third rail and he backed away from it. He couldn't articulate why it needed to be at least be repaired somehow. But Mike Pence, yes, he's a big government. He's a big government rhino, and just proposing more New Deal stuff, a new deal, a fair deal, a square deal or whatever. It ain't going to cut it. We need people up there who like Trump perhaps tried to do, or maybe even hopefully Ron DeSantis will try to do, say, listen, we don't need to reform government. We need to be cutting government and cutting it big time, getting rid of the damned EPA, which doesn't do anything but take away our fossil fuels and our stoves and instead gives us toxic waste spills. We need to be getting rid of the Department of Education, which is doing nothing but brainwashing our children to hate us. And we need to be getting rid of all of these departments, which are absolute wastes. Now, the problem is, people will say, well, how do you regulate, you know, human nature? How do you regulate people who want to take advantage? Maybe the railroad was greedy. Maybe so-and-so is greedy. Yes, I mean, people, you know, there's good and bad and there's good and evil everywhere. But the problem is we've de-stressed or de-emphasized the notion of ethics and the notion of accountability and the notions of morality that are supposed to prevent people from being criminals and being reprobates. You're going to have criminals and reprobates, but unless you have a philosophy or a religious instruction or a family-centric instruction that stresses being decent, caring, ethical, moral, upright human beings, you know, well, then all of this crap is going to happen.
Well, we're always coming back to East Palestine. If you look at the accident there, you find some error made or some series of errors made by the railroad. But we have had railroad regulation, probably for 110 years.
Easily that much, yes.
And we have multiple federal organizations that are dedicated to the regulation of the interstate railroad system. They failed miserably. I'm not sure what the solution can be. Obviously, government is not the solution. So why not return to simple tort law? You know, run your trains through my town. If you spill stuff, I'm going to court and I'm going to destroy your company. And that motivation might be much more powerful than these overlapping and obviously rankly incompetent government organizations. Can you defend a single government, a single organization within government that is regulating the railroads right now? No, you can't, because they obviously have failed. Okay, folks, this has been Cut Jib Newsletter, the podcast. I apologize for the technical difficulties. We will be back next week. We'll be moving into our brand spanking new studios. I'm not sure where they are yet, but we'll figure something out. Anyway, thank you all very much for listening, and we